Blog Talk Radio.
Blog alerts if you go to their site.
the statement argues that only by standing up to the hostage takers and taking away their leverage can we focus on the urgent challenge of fixing the economy, raising wages, investing in our people, and putting America back to work. Yeah, I mean, I have to agree. That's,
yeah,
you know.
You got to do that. You know, it's like, come on, for crying out loud. Yeah.
And then if you go on to the blog, to this AFL-CIO blog, you can also make a comment on the articles that you read, so you can do that.
Yeah.
And many people have commented on that article.
Sure. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. You're in Missouri. They got an issue where it says, stop paycheck deception in Missouri. Last week we told you that the paycheck deception and other anti-worker legislation formulated in the American Legislative Exchange Council's ALEC corporation, corporate-backed laboratories were moving in the Missouri legislature. Now paycheck deception is close to a Senate vote, and the Missouri AFL-CIO is urging show-me state voters to call their senators. Okay, and what's happening is they're stealing their money. Yeah, this is so much crap.
And urge them to oppose SB 29.
Yeah.
Says Missouri President Hugh McVey.
Extremists are pushing a paycheck deception bill that would silence the vote of snowplow plow drivers, street crews, nurses, grocery store workers, and other hardworking Missourians. Attacks on frontline workers are the last thing our states need. They won't create a single job, and the paycheck deception bill and similar measures will make life more difficult for the frontline workers who work for us every day.
I'm not sure what that bill's going to do.
It doesn't say. It really is.
I guess they explained it last week, but they're not.
Let's take a look. And it looks like they're trying to take money out of their paychecks. Yeah, it's for best.
Voters from across the state of Missouri wrote letters to the state senators this week urging them to reject right to work for less. Oh, that's what it is. And paycheck deception legislation. Both proposals are currently before the state's General Assembly. These tired attacks on working families are just wrong, said Mike Melson, an auto worker from Wentzville, Missouri. Divisible bills like right to work and paycheck deception are all about politics, not economics. Our leaders in Jefferson City should be working to create jobs and move Missouri's economy forward, not focusing on political paybacks. At a time when the economy continues to struggle to recover and many families are still waiting for employment to pick up, Missourians need more economic security, not less, said Diana Ahrens of Independence, a former steelworker and member of Jobs with Justice. Progress Missouri has taken a closer look at the bills and sees the fingerprints of the American Legislative Exchange Council all over them. At least 11 sponsors or co-sponsors of the various House and Senate bills have ties to the American Legislative Exchange Council. In side-by-side comparison of the bills to ALEC's model legislation border on plagiarism. Legislators need to be listening to ordinary people, not corporate special interests pushing an extreme agenda, said Sean Nicholson, Progress Missouri's executive director. The bills being pushed by ALEC, that's the American Legislative Exchange Council, put corporate profits ahead of the well-being of average Americans. It's time to make sure that ordinary people, not corporate interests, are in charge of government.
Oh, that's true. Yada yada. Oh, boy. Oh.
5 reasons why the U.S. needs a financial transactions tax. I'm not familiar with that. This is by Travis Waldron. Let's go right to the article.
That's the same thing that Ralph Nader tried.
Is that what Ralph tried to do?
Ralph tried to do years ago.
A penny tax on
on every trade,
mm-hmm.
And every trade in Wall Street.
A duo of Democratic lawmakers have spent the years since the financial crisis calling for a financial transactions tax. A small fee on individual trades that would slow down markets and make them safe for investors in the country as a whole. Senator Tom Harkin of Iowa and Representative Peter DeFazio of Oregon introduced legislation that would institute the financial transaction tax again this year after 11 European countries announced they would adopt such a tax. The Center for American Progress, Adam Hirsch and Jennifer Erickson, published a new paper today outlining 5 reasons why the United States should move to adopt one immediately. 1, it would bring new revenue. Even a small financial transaction tax would bring in a substantial amount of revenue. Taxing stock trades at 0.117%, bonds at 0.002%, and derivatives and swaps at 0.005%.
That's like 0.002% and 0.005%.
Would raise $50 billion a year, according to Hirsch and Erickson. That's enough to cover the cost of veterans' health benefits or enough to cover more than half of the sequestration.
There you go.
2, it stabilizes financial markets. The explosion of high-frequency trading, in which trades are made by computer algorithms by the millisecond, has made markets more volatile. Even the creator of high frequency trading has said it has absolutely no social value. A financial transaction tax would disincentivize such trading by charging a fee on each trade and quickly make it unprofitable in stabilizing financial markets. 3, it incentivizes investments that drive growth. The tax would make investors more likely to hold their investments in stock portfolios for longer periods of time, creating a longer-term outlook on stocks that would translate into more investment, more jobs, and higher productivity in the real economy, all of which drives growth, Hirsch and Erickson write. A tax on financial trading will shift behavior toward investment for the long term, which is better for financing businesses and for stable, sustained economic growth. 4, other countries already have it. Last month, 11 European Union countries, including Germany and France, announced that they would institute a financial transactions tax, bringing the global total to 23 countries. That mitigates the argument opponents made that such a tax would make American markets less competitive. 5, business leaders support it. As Hirsch and Erickson note, the tax is supported by economists, business leaders, and veterans of the financial industry. Nobel Prize-winning economists Joseph Stiglitz and Paul Krugman have both endorsed it, as have mutual fund titan John Bogle and John Fullerton, a former director at J.P. Morgan Chase. A modest financial transaction tax of less than 1% would serve as a remarkable, efficient tool to achieve needed reform, Fullerton wrote in 2011.
So I agree. I agreed
it's
with that.
It's painless for everybody.
I agreed with that a long time ago.
I thought Ralph Nader had a great idea.
He came up with that in 2004. I totally agree.
Or before.
Yeah, I think it was 2004. But anyway, that's what we feel.
Let's see, what else do we have?
And it says, let's see.
LA bus buys creates new U.S. jobs. Let's make sure other cities follow suit. Well, let's find out about buses.
Okay.
Linda Nguyen Perez, a research political analyst at the Los Angeles Alliance for the New Economy, works to promote America's manufacturing jobs and create career pathways for historically disadvantaged women and men. And Michelle Knapp is the director of the Cerdner Foundation Sustainable Environment Program. This is a cross post from the Huffington Post. The Los Angeles County's Metropolitan Transportation Authority needed new clean buses. If LA Metro had simply followed current buying protocol, its single focus would have been on finding a company to deliver the lowest cost buses. In all likelihood, this is, would have resulted in jobs going overseas. But for some final assembly jobs on U.S. soil. Let's see what they did instead. Takes a minute to be able to move this. Instead, in January, L.A. Metro awarded a $305 million contract for 550 clean fuel buses to New Flyer Industries, a Canadian company with dedicated manufacturing plants in the U.S. The bus order means that the company will expand its factory operations in St. Cloud, Minnesota, add a third shift, hire 150 women and men from the local community, and create another 50 jobs in Los Angeles. L.A. Metro took a longer-term view of how big-ticket transportation purchases, most of them supported by the federal government, can stimulate high-quality jobs and manufacturing in the U.S. L.A. Metro broke the purchasing mold by shaping and utilizing a new model called the U.S. Employment Plan with support from the nonprofit LANE, L-A-A-N-E, I'm not sure what that means. The U.S. Employment Plan gained federal support for use in this procurement bid. Under the bid, the company's bidding on the publicly funded transportation equipment order had to describe the number and quality of American jobs that were to be created from the contract, as well as how they plan to develop the jobs, for example, recruitment, workforce development, and training commitments. L.A. Metro then compared bids based on the cost of transportation equipment plus the employment benefits and overall economic impact. That's good.
Yeah. So, anyway, let's go on from there. There was an article here I wanted to read. It was, okay, get to it in just a second, folks. Hang on a second.
Required to break even, the Postal Service
has to deliver mail to areas that are unprofitable for private companies to operate in. A letter sent to a small town in Alaska is picked up and transported across the country to a farm in Maine for 46 cents, while the internet and recession have eaten into some of the Postal Service's letter business, magazines, books, letter, newsletters, prescription, and advertising, DVD services like Netflix, and many other services still depend on the Postal Service for delivery. And many people, for one reason or another, still send letters. In a democracy, these people are supposed to count to.
But along with requiring the Postal Service to break even, Congress has restricted the service's ability to raise rates, enter new lines of business, or take other steps to help it raise revenue. In fact, while detractors complain that the Postal Service is inadequate, inefficient, and burdened by bureaucracy, the rules blocking the Postal Service from entering new lines of business do so because the Postal Service would have an advantage over private companies. For example, Republicans in Congress forced the Postal Service to remove public use copiers from post offices, I wondered, and even blocked the Postal Service from setting up a secure online system that allowed Americans to make monthly bill payments. The Postal Service is a public service for we the people, not a business. The service is hamstrung by people who pretend it is supposed to compete and then won't let it. They won't help with taxpayer dollars and say it has to compete in the marketplace. Again, the Department of Defense is not required to break even. Then they give it rules that no private company could survive. Then when it gets in trouble, say the government doesn't work and start laying the people off, selling off public assets, and saying it has to be privatized. So all the gains will go to a few already wealthy people instead of the public.
So, you know, Republicans should die. I'm sorry, die, Republicans, die.
Well, because they have a buddy who wants to buy the building, who wants to have the...
Die, Republicans, die. You know, and it's like, this is the only way. It's the only way. Sorry. Yeah, either you kill them or you imprison them. I'm sorry, it's a sick life. And that's what you got to do. You know, these people are going to kill you. Come on. Wait a minute. Okay. I can't stand these people anymore.
Boehner and Cruz get pushback on Social Security and Medicare cuts. Let's see what this has to say.
Got a little thing here.
Let's just tune.
You have an appointment. Unfortunately, he's unavailable at the moment, but as I said, I am happy to take your concerns and pass this along.
As we gather in this place, we thank you for the opportunity to be here, to pray for Speaker Boehner, for Brittany and his staff. We ask, Lord, your blessing today as we witness and pray against the injustice of decisions made in this office in favor of corporate America, while the most vulnerable and the poor are ground into the dust.
Right now, there are no limits to how much big corporations can deduct from their income taxes.
That ain't right.
That ain't right. Huge compensation packages and lavish bonuses they pay their CEOs. Put an end to just this CEO pay tax break, and we can raise $42 billion over the next 10 years.
Our community has been devastated. We're an old mill town. There's a lot of poverty in the downtown neighborhood where I live. We have a lot of vacant buildings. In fact, they're doing, they're tearing down a lot of the old buildings. There are over 80 on the list to be torn down as I speak. We have poverty and people aren't having their basic needs met. It's inhumane to choose wealthy corporations, big corporations, over human beings.
That ain't right.
That ain't right. The milk, the eggs, the milk formula, and the baby food for my children. And right now, my daughter is on the WIC program for my grandchildren. And we need this WIC program to keep my grandkids healthy.
All they are hearing is the rumble from their stomachs from not having enough food.
That ain't right.
At this critical hour, let those who claim a desire to create opportunity begin by creating opportunity for corporations and the 1% to pay their fair share.
Oh, and pray for Boner.
No, what she was saying was pray that he gets some enlightenment.
Yeah, well, pray that he croaks. You know, it's like, what a joke. You know, call Congress, don't let Washington cut your Social Security benefits. Union members of work. Let's look at this.
Well,
don't let Washington cut your Social Security benefits.
Oh, I hope
not. Amazing what's going on out there, folks.
This was written by Jackie Tortora also. Don't let Washington cut your Social Security benefits. Today, AARP is asking working families to call Congress to tell their elected legislators they oppose the change CPI that would cut Social Security benefits. Call 1-800-323-2230 and tell your senators to vote no on cuts to Social Security benefits. To make matters worse, the younger a person is now, the larger the benefit cut is under the change CPI. Here are five reasons why the change CPI is the wrong choice. Number one, it's a benefit cut. The change CPI is a significant benefit cut, not some technical change, as some in Washington would like you to believe. Number two, cuts get deeper every year. The change CPI benefit cut would start now and get bigger with every year passing, costing seniors, veterans, and our nation's most vulnerable thousands of dollars over their lifetime. Number three, it cuts benefits for today's seniors. Most politicians promised during the 2012 campaign not to cut Social Security for current seniors. The change CPI would break the promise, cutting benefits that today's seniors have earned through a lifetime of hard work. Number four, it's less accurate for seniors. The change CPI assumes that when the cost of something you normally buy goes up, you will substitute a lower cost item. This theory falls short since many seniors and veterans spend much of their money on basic goods like prescription drugs, utilities, and health care. Items that don't have lower cost substitutes. Number five, it's the wrong solution. America's workers deserve a separate national conversation about how to protect Social Security for today's seniors and responsibly strengthen it for their children and grandchildren.
That's the reality, folks.
I think it would be a good time for you to play something while we up that audio that we had last night. So Leo's going to, and I will take a little music break. That we've played.
Tell me the sheet.
Yeah. We have to go back to yesterday's news. This is a new headlines we need to go back to. Why don't you play another song, Leo, while we look?
Well,
it
takes just a second. hold on, folks. We'll be right with you. And we got last week we talked about, last night we talked about the Codex Amoralis, I believe it was. Or what, restricting the food, making food poisonous. Okay, creating poisonous foods and feeding them to the world to create to kill off about 3 billion people.
Well, we need to finish what she
years.
Has to say.
And we're gonna go to that. Just one second here. So hang on a second.
We listened to about half of that, I think.
Yeah, we will get to that in one second. I hope. Where is she?
Doesn't look like yesterday.
What is this?
Go back up
to that. Nope. It's there somewhere. I have it on my site, actually. Go to my website. Lacyosha.org. Gene.
Maybe you should go back to your website. It'd be easier. Don't look at
it. Yeah. I thought it was on this week's.
Maybe it was on the page, third page.
Sorry, folks. Hang on a second. Got it here.
Just put on some music, Leo, so that while we're looking for this, people have something to listen to. Please do that.
Okay.
While we find it.
Okay, folks, bear with me one second. That's why I have to do stuff like this. Why did it be done?
No.
Anyway.
Here's what we've done.
We have a team of lawyers who have spent hundreds of hours with us pro bono. These are good guy lawyers. These two gentlemen and we have spent hundreds of hours studying Codex, understanding its weaknesses, and constructing a strategy which will take the sucker down. It will take it down. But I need you. You are people that other people come to for information about safe, healthy food and nutrients. You are ready-made dissemination points. You are the 1,000,000,000, 100,000,000 points of light. Here's what is happening. Every country in the world has to be Codex compliant in order not to get hit by WTO trade sanctions, as I told you, if they're members of Codex and the WTO. And there are a few countries that are not, but I guarantee you they're not of any major significance. So, the question is, what does Codex compliance mean? Well, most people, most countries, most legislators believe that it means they have to adopt as their national standard on that particular subject what Codex ratified. But that's not the case any more than we're in the WTO. That's not the case either. What it means is that the format, the issues, and the subjects covered by a Codex guideline, standard, or regulation have to be addressed in the country's guideline, standard, or regulation on the same topic. So, what we have done is create the first of many alternative Codex guidelines. You can go to our website, www.healthfreedomusa.org, and you will see a little button on the upper right-hand side that says, sign the citizen's petition. Now, to briefly digress, the citizen's petition is not like a grocery store petition that you sign and you bring to somebody and you say, I have 200,000 signatures, and they dump it in the wastebasket, because in their mind, it's one signature, you and your friends wrote 200,000 names. No, it is a legal challenge to the policy of the United States government on Codex. It's called a citizen's petition. It's a legal challenge. We're suing the United States government, saying what you're doing is illegal, folks. Let us tell you how. We want hearings of fact. We want redress. We want correction. If we get what we want, that's dandy. If we don't get what we want, we have gone through a process called exhausting administrative remedies. We have made the case ripe for court. Okay, so I need you and everybody you know to sign this citizen's petition saying this is a bad policy en masse. And you do this on the web, and you'll see the instructions, and we present the thousands and thousands and thousands of actual physical pages that we print out with people's signatures to the U.S. Codex office and to the FDA, and they don't like that at all. But that's okay. However, this time, this is the second amendment of the citizens' petition that we're asking you to sign. This time, the revised vitamin and mineral guideline is part of it. It's part of the lawsuit saying this needs to be U.S. policy. The more voices that say, this is what I want, and you work for me, Mr. and Mrs. Bureaucrat, Mr. and Mrs. Congressman, Mr. and Mrs. Senator, the more voices, the more weight. So step number one is read and sign the citizen's petition. Step number two is disseminate the information, the web link. Tell everybody you know. Put it out in your office. Get your patients, your friends, your neighbors, your suppliers to sign the citizen's petition. And your suppliers, the companies that you use, are going to tell you that you're out of your minds. They will tell you that Codex is not a problem. And they will tell you, anybody here have a dog? Okay. Dog owners know that you ask a dog to heel, sit, down, say that codex in this country and worldwide. Because the more people who are in codex coma, the less trouble they have getting this through. So the NNFA, anybody here ever heard of the NNFA? Everybody's heard of the NNFA. Did you know that the members of the NNFA are not just health food stores and manufacturers, but include companies with names you may have heard? Pfizer, Merck, Monsanto, Bayer, BASF, Archer Daniels Midland, Kemet, Eastman Chemical, I could go on, GlaxoSmithKline Wellcome, YF Arrest, you get the idea. Why? Because after Deshaies was passed and the nutrient business burgeoned, the pharmaceutical folks said, and they're not dumb, said there's gold in them NAR pills. And they bought the means of production of many, many, many companies, and they bought the companies themselves. So they're in the nutrient business. What better way to kill the nutrient business, which is not nearly as profitable as the toxic chemical drug business, than to take it over? Works every time, right? CRN. Anybody here know about CRN? Council for Responsible Nutrition. Same members. They have lots of multi-level marketing companies. Same members. Okay? And they're serving their members' needs. They're saying, CRN is saying, yay, Codex is coming. It's going to protect us from those dangerous vitamins and minerals and herbs. And CRN is saying, sleep, lullaby, and good night. Everything's fine. And they use a report that they commissioned at a reputed cost of $800,000. A report, Sidley, Austin, Brown, and Root, a law firm in Washington, wrote a report for them. And it said, lullaby, and good night. Everything's fine. It won't have an impact on the United States. Everything's fine. Sidley, Austin, Brown, and Root has one major client whose name you might know, Merck. Now, it's entirely possible that NNFA just did a spectacularly bad job of due diligence, or not. Anyway, the report says everything's fine, everything's dandy, no problem, we've got Deshaies. Yeah, sure we do. Now let's talk about Australia. Remember, five laws before Congress to overturn Deshaies. And you can write to Congress on the website. Click of a mouse. I call it riding the freedom mouse. Now, Congress uses a multiplier of 13,000 to 1. Every email, fax, phone call, letter. Don't write letters. They get decontaminated. They never get to Congress. Every email, fax, and phone call counts as 13,000 constituent opinions. They figure that if you write a letter or send an email, there are 12,999 lazy lunks who can't bother to get to the computer terminal to do the same thing, but they feel the way you do. Interesting. That's power, my friends. That's power. That's 13,000 to 1. So suppose we have 1 million people. Suppose we have 10 million people. Suppose we have 100 million people saying, don't you dare. Now, Congress has one rule above all others. Anybody know what it is? Get reelected. That's the primary rule, the prime directive, as Isaac Asimov would have called it. The prime directive is to get reelected. Now, Deshaies was passed, you may remember, by unanimous congressional consent. Was that because one morning all members of Congress woke up and said, I see the light. Nutrients are better than drugs. No. They said, oh, if I don't go along with this, I'll never be reelected to anything. You remember critical mass? Remember, we were out on the streets and we were up on our hind legs and we were making noise and we were rallying and we were writing letters and we said, don't you dare take away my health freedom. Remember? And we won. Except we got fat, dumb, and lazy and stopped protecting ourselves. So now we're in the same place again. Except it's all food instead of just nutrients. So that's point number one. use the Freedom Mouse. Ride the Freedom Mouse. We've made it as easy as possible on the site. Sign up for the emails. I will never sell your information to anyone, I promise. I will never rent it. I will never share it. You'll only get emails from me. And we need you to know what's going on. So I'll send you email blasts. I'll send you things that you can do or not. You know, it's your choice. Get everybody you know informed. Now, what else can you do? Well, we're going to write a series of Codex alternative guidelines. Everything bad in Codex will have an alternative guideline that turns it into a pro-health guideline. What have we done with the guideline, the vitamin and mineral guideline? You can see that because we have a markup copy that has their guideline crossed out and ours written in on the website. It's right there. What we've done is turn it into something, into a guideline that mandates biochemically, individually determined optimal health. And it's still Codex compliant. So we said, okay, now we need Congress to adopt this. And we need other countries in the world to adopt this. So Bert and I went to Washington, D.C., and we met with Dana Rohrabacher from Orange County, who said to us, he's a representative. He said, I believe in pesticides. I went, ugh. He said, I believe in GMOs. I went, ugh. He said, I believe in irradiation of food. I went, ugh. But, he said, I believe in your right to not be forced to eat foods that have been processed that way more than I believe in those technologies. I will take this on. We said, oh, that's really nice. And he said, now, we need a coalition. So we went across the aisle, or across the office building, to see Peter DeFazio's staff from Oregon, who is a liberal Democrat, whereas Rohrabacher is a Republican, a libertarian Republican. And DeFazio's on board. And we have large numbers of others who actually never heard of Codex before we told them about it. Never heard of Codex. We have called every health legislative aide in Congress, and we have said, what's your congressman's position on Codex? And they've said, blah. We have spoken to the trade legislative assistants. We've said, what's your congressman's position on Codex? And they said, a lot. They don't know. We had a congressional briefing set up on the 20th of September. I was going to address Congress, tell them about it. I thought that was cool. 10 days before, it became a briefing on something else. Another freedom click. You need to write to Congress on the site and tell them that they need a congressional briefing, by God, and tell them you want me to brief them. They don't know. They've never heard of it any more than the general public has heard of it. Gee, how'd that happen? Who knows? Every negative part of Codex can be overturned by a guideline, a regulation, or a standard that is positive. So we need your help, because the United States leadership in this guideline and all the positive guidelines to follow is what's going to literally save the population of the planet and save your jobs, and your children, and your families, and mine. Thank you.
Unfortunately, that's exactly what's happening. And,
goes on to other programs about this. They're all pretty long.
Yeah.
Codex Elementarius explained in 6 minutes. Maybe we could do that one.
Okay. That's part of it. So maybe we could. That would help people.
Yeah. Yeah. Just
kind of sums it all up.
Bringing up Canada to the New World Order.
Accumulate through the food web and cause adverse effects to human health and the environment. Most pops are used as a pesticide for fruits, vegetables, and other cash crops. If pops were used on a crop one season and not used the next, the crops can still be affected by them because it can accumulate in the soil, having a toxic effect on the crop. Humans and animals then eat the food, and pops can actually bioaccumulate in the fatty tissue of the unsuspecting victim. Scientists estimate that the misuse of pop causes thousands of accident deaths, millions of disabilities, and billions of lost dollars annually. The Stockholm Convention is a global treaty signed by 176 countries to protect human life and environment from pop. It was established in 2004. The website is chm.pops.int. End result at the time was they successfully banned 12 of the worst organic pollutants known to man. The 12 worst pops were chlordine, DDT, Deldrin, dioxin, endrin, furan, heptachlor, hexachlorobenzene, myrix, polychlorinated bifenylates, and toxaphene. 9 out of 12 of these chemicals were pesticides. Now that you know that information, let me introduce you to what Codex Elementarius is. Codex Elementarius was a commission created in 1963 by World Health Organization and Food Agriculture Organization by the UN, United Nations, to develop food standards guidelines. It was also created to control the trade of food. It was done under the practice of the joint FAO and WHO food standards program. Codex has rules for absolutely everything we can legally put into our mouth, except for pharmaceuticals. It's all about trade and the profits of multinational corporations. You can visit their website and check out the standards for yourself at www.codexelementaris.net at the top right, put cursor on official standards. Let me assure you that the food standards are not in the attention of the people. They may say that on their website, but they are lying. Codex is unscientific because it classifies nutrients as toxins and uses risk assessment to set ultra-low so-called safe upper limits for them. Risk assessment is a branch of toxicology, the science for assessing toxins. The proper science for assessing nutrients is biochemistry. Codex does not use biochemistry. I'm going to list a few of the most important standards and things the Commission wants to achieve and make mandatory by December 31st, 2009. Under Codex, every dairy cow on the planet must be treated with Monsanto recombinant bovine growth hormone. Recombinant bovine growth hormone is a genetically engineered copy of a natural occurring hormone produced by cows. Monsanto Company is the one who manufactures it. Milk production increases by as much as 10 to 15%. Recombinant bovine growth hormone milk is supercharged with high levels of natural growth factor and has been known to cause breast, colon, and prostate cancers.
Got milk? Better yet, how about? Got cancer? Got a sick prostate? And you're looking for answers?
Under Codex, every animal must be treated with antibiotics and growth hormones. Literally, every animal we eat. Under Codex states that all food must be irradiated. That means to heat with radiation or to expose to radiation. 176 countries agreed to ban the 12 worst organic chemicals known to man. 9 out of these chemicals were pesticides. Codex is bringing back 7 out of these 9 forbidden pops. Food with these chemicals on them cannot be stopped at the borders because it would be a trade violation. All of this will be mandatory December 31st, 2009. When Codex Alimentarius goes into global implementation in 2009, the joint WHO and FAO projection for the impact of Codex Alimentarius nutrition and mineral guidelines alone, not including the impact of pesticides, will result in a minimum of 3 billion deaths, 1 billion through starvation, and 2 billion will die from the preventable diseases of undernutrition. Dr. Rima Labo from the Natural...
Isn't that a wonderful prescription, folks? And that's what's happening to you.
Yeah,
that's
really
what's happening
scary,
to us
isn't
now.
It?
And God forbid.
Well, let's hope
but
that...
But ever since 2009, that's when this program was to become totally ineffective. And it's now, and that was, what, 4 years ago. So, welcome to the world of death. Well, good night, everybody. Join me tomorrow night.